I'm here with Maurice Wilson, a retired Navy Master Chief Petty Officer with 25 years of service. Maurice is the President, Executive Director of the National Veterans Transitioning Services Incorporated and Reboot, a nonprofit organization he founded. I'm also here with our honorary guest, Toby Rehm. Toby is a retired veteran with 25 years of service, 10 years active duty Navy, and 15 years Air National Guard. He is a program manager with 20 years of IT infrastructure experience, cloud, and enterprise security experience. Currently, he's focused on scaling Microsoft security for its sovereign cloud support. Welcome to our sixth episode. Happy to have you both.
Hey, it's very good to be here. I can't wait to learn more about Toby and how his transition is going.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, Kajal and Maurice. Appreciate the opportunity.
As you may or may not know, nearly two-thirds of new veterans say they faced difficulty transitioning into civilian life. Well, this podcast is all about helping veterans find their identity after service and really offer some guidance, support, some tips, tricks, anything that would be helpful and useful and how to achieve that. Toby, I'm just going to get right into it. Tell us a little bit about your history and maybe your childhood to start.
Oh, goodness.
We're going way back when. Back. Yes.
Well, so as you'll learn, though, to start out, I do work at Microsoft, so I do want to give a kind of a disclaimer. So the views and opinions as expressed by Toby may or may not reflect the views and opinions as expressed by Microsoft. Just limit their liability. So going back, so you want to know, like, just all the way back to my childhood?
Yeah, I'd love to know just a little bit about your background, some of your schooling, and then how you wanted to get into the service. Like, what was that journey like? So kind of just starting from scratch.
I grew up in a small town called Cottage Grove, Oregon. I don't know as if there was anything really special about my childhood. It's just a small town in middle Pacific Northwest. It was a logging town. But what got me interested in the military was Top Gun. The original, because the second one hasn't come out yet. So Tom Cruise, you know, obviously, so Maverick and Goose. And of course, at the time, I didn't realize that you had to have 20/20. So of course, I wanted to be Maverick, only to find out later on the only way what I could do was Goose, right? Don't have 20/20 vision. But that's really what got me into it. My brother brought in a Air Force Academy liaison officer when I was in junior high. And they were asking questions about, you know, could he make it to the Air Force Academy? But we had gone from a private school back into public school, and the transition was pretty brutal. And so he didn't qualify, but we got in front of my career far enough that after my ninth grade year, I told my dad that I wanted to go, at the time I thought Air Force, because you think fly, and you think, oh, I must need to go to the Air Force. And so he waited till the end of the summer to confirm, are you really serious? And I said, yes. And then we just followed a very methodical path based upon what that Air Force Academy liaison officer had provided in terms of input to my dad about my brother at the time, and tried to kind of put all the checks in the box to make my resume look good. And ultimately, I ended up doing so well when I was in swimming, that I was a backstroker. And so I did so well, I went to junior nationals, that the Naval Academy wanted me. And so they ended up actually reviewing my package. The senior medical officer there reviewed my package, overrode what the Department of Defense Medical Examination Review Board, DODMERB, had put in there, meaning you're disqualified. He's like, this doesn't look like it's a big deal. We'll waiver you. And so I ended up reaching back out to both my senator and my representative to, would you please switch my nominations? The representative ended up switching for me, and I ended up getting accepted to the Naval Academy. Top Gun being the reason why, you know, that sort of going fast, obviously it's a cliche, but it worked for me, you know, and that's why I wanted to join the military. My dad was a Vietnam vet, but I'm going to be honest, he never talked about it. He wouldn't watch any war movies with us. He would answer questions. He wouldn't shirk the question, but he would never volunteer anything.
And did your brother get into the Navy as well?
He did. He enlisted in the Air Force. So he went to college. I think, you know, I came from a very strict background, so when my brother got away from my parents, he started partying, and of course, that isn't good for grades, so he decided to, you know, actually enlist in the Air Force because the college route that he was taking at the time wasn't looking so good with all his extracurricular activities, so he served around 4 years, whatever, in security forces, guarding a bunch of our nuclear arsenal.
Great. So you have a family of veterans, and so
yes.
It came within the family dynamic, and then also I think we're all pretty influenced by Tom Cruise movies, I think. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your time in the military and your career. What was that journey like? Hi, veterans. It's Kadra Shalat with CCS Learning Academy. I work with veterans every day, and I know what a struggle it is to, one, translate your military career into civilian terms, and two, find a good paying job. If this is you, let me point you in the direction of CCS Learning Academy's technology bootcamp programs. They're an awesome way to get into the booming tech field and leverage your military credentials. We offer two that veterans do really well in, cybersecurity and data analytics. These are 8 to 12 week accelerated courses. You learn all the relevant technology and applications being used in today's tech landscape, so you're ready day one. We give you a mentor, help you with job search, and we even connect you to our talent recruiters from CCS Global Tech. You can be in a tech job, earning a paycheck, and starting your career in 6 months or less. I'd love to tell you more, so contact me at ccslearningacademy.com. Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, so I graduated the academy, although at one point in time I didn't know. I'd actually remember going to the chaplain and telling him I wanted to resign, because they wouldn't let you resign unless you'd spoken to the chaplain. I remember him saying, well, would you regret it? And I'm like, hell yeah. But I was just so overwhelmed at the time. It was my freshman, they called it plebe year. But I ended up not quitting, glad I didn't quit. And so I graduated, I received the very last billet for naval flight officer. I remember like two guys behind me, the captain of the baseball team, I hope he's not listening to this, but I ended up grabbing the last billet. He didn't get naval flight officer. I did. It was pretty cool. So I graduated, went home for about, I think, 7 months, because although they were short, they also just didn't have a pipeline that could support this. So I was doing recruiting at home, working with the local recruiters, which is kind of interesting because recruiting for an academy is not really something you do. But I went to a lot of college fairs with them and, you know, answered questions, and then ended up moving to Florida, and they still didn't have a slot for me, so they ended up putting me in charge of the year analysis program, and I ran that until I actually officially started flight school. I spent, I don't know how many months there, actually in flight school, and then I had selected, at the time they called it jets or props, and I had chosen props, which is a misnomer. What they should have said was carrier-based or non-carrier-based, and I selected non-carrier-based aircraft. And so I was sent from Pensacola after I graduated from that part of the program in VT-10. And then I was sent to San Antonio, Texas. It was a joint program, and I looked, and it doesn't look like it's even open now. But so all Navy and Air Force navigators were actually, meaning on bigger aircraft, were actually going through the same pipeline. And so that was the 562nd Flight Training Squadron in San Antonio, Texas, where I was assigned, and I earned my wings there. So my Navy wings were signed by an Air Force lieutenant colonel, is interesting. And then that's all anyone knows anything about aviation. All your flight school is generic. So I selected the P-3 Charlie, which is, I think, been decommissioned. There might be one or two squadrons left, but they're transitioning that to the P-8. Something that Boeing is making, a 737 based. But I selected the P-3 out of flight school, and I went to Jacksonville, Florida for my training specifically in that aircraft. And then after that training, I was stationed in Barbers Point, Hawaii, where I went and did, so 3.5 years there. I deployed to Japan, the Middle East. I also happened to meet my wife in Hawaii, and so I also got married. And then following that tour, I was assigned to Okinawa, Japan, and I was there in support of the P-3 mission. And the other big milestone on a personal note, my daughter was born there. But what was interesting in terms of rounding this out, I learned about what information warfare was in Okinawa, because the officer in charge there had gone to Navy postgraduate school, and he had a class in it and learned a little bit. Couldn't actually tell me a lot about it because it was classified. Mm-hmm. But what he could tell me, my mouth started watering. So I attempted to try to transition to that in the Navy, but we were very short. I was in what was called the T-notch. So from the year groups 93 through 96, they didn't even have enough people to fill all the slots. And so they were literally unwilling to let me move. they were willing to lose me rather than, you know, let me move. But of course, 9/11 happened. And I think kind of a lot of that went away because people decided to stay in. I decided not to. I ended up resigning. And it was because I wanted to do a different job.
And so when you left, did you think about what was your next move? I mean, I'm sure it was a bit overwhelming to kind of think about that next transition piece. So what was that like?
So my brother built my first computer. And then what ended up happening is, I'm going to be honest, I just started playing video games. And that's what really got me into tech. But the funny thing is, back then when you were playing video games on the PC, you were constantly having to adjust something because nothing ever really worked. And you ended up learning a lot about the computer. So I ended up building a bunch of computers. And when I arrived in Okinawa, I decided I want to get out. The question is, what do I want to do? It was that discussion about information warfare that began to kind of slowly steer me towards security. But I knew I wanted to do something in tech, although it was just aspirational at the time. But I started building computers at home, learning about it. I built a network. I ended up getting some MCSE, the Microsoft, what is it? I don't even know what it stands for anymore.
Microsoft Certified Engineer.
Yes, there you go. Yep. So I got that in Windows. This is dating me. Windows 2000 workstation and server. But I had four computers that I was networking. I ended up drilling a hole in the wall with my neighbor. We networked his. We did LAN parties, but it also taught me a lot about how to connect networks. I had a modem that I connected and networked between all the different computers so I could use it like a network, even though it was only, no joke, a modem. You probably don't remember those, but you know, I think I was at 56K.
I remember the day when they had 14.4s.
There you go. So it really started out just kind of learning on my own. Once I told my boss that I wanted to move into that direction, I did have an opportunity at the end to go and do some work with some schools and such in Okinawa and do some volunteer work and whatnot and actually work in IT. And then I was able to transition into the maintenance shop where like we ran our exchange server. And so I was getting some hands-on and some management experience in that field while I was still in the Navy. So that was kind of what I did to try to make my resume robust. But you have to realize I was getting out post 9/11 right after the bubble burst, which was certainly not an ideal time. But that's sort of what I did to prepare.
And then what was your transition like? It seemed like a lot of self-studying, a lot of self-motivation that you had. But what was it like getting into your first job out from there? What was that like? Especially, you know, during the circumstances, a lot of tough times for a lot of people during that time. How were you able to navigate?
I mean, to be honest, it was brutal. It felt like a failure. So I got out in October 2002. I had 60 days of terminal leave, and I think the terminal leave, the October date was post-terminal leave, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on that. But then I went through approximately 2 months of unemployment. So that first Thanksgiving back in the States, I was unemployed. And then I got a 3-week contract gig, which I ended up being honest, and I finished all the stuff they asked me to do in 2 weeks, 4 days. So, you know, they're like, oh, see you later. And so that was between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so then I went Christmas unemployed, and then another 2 months of unemployment. But the folks on that contract remembered me. And in February, I was brought back. And then from there, in May, I was hired by the prime on that contract. And then from there, thankfully, I've not been unemployed since. But it was a lot of hard work. I mean, being unemployed, especially in this age of the internet where you can apply to stuff at any given point in time, it's pretty brutal. And then just that self-talk that's going through in your head and just feeling like a failure and whatnot and really battling that, I think is incredibly hard.
Yeah, Maurice works with veterans, specifically veterans transitioning every single day. So Maurice, is this something that you hear frequently?
Absolutely. I have a whole lot of comments and questions for Toby. I mean, I was like listening to his, sort of like his track. And so I actually myself spent some time at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas, you know, Navy, going there to do some learning and education. And interesting, Toby, after I ended up there for, it was Aviation Physiology Tech School, my first duty station was, guess what? Barbers Point, Hawaii. So it's like, okay.
Nice. we're both aging ourselves here. I don't know if this is good. Yeah.
And what did they have a lot of? P3s.
A lot of P3s. That's exactly right. Yep.
And then I finished my tour there. I stayed in Hawaii for about 3.5 years. Then I came back to California to Pendleton. And then guess where else I ended up at? I ended up in Okinawa. So it's almost like we were following each other's career. And it was so interesting because that was around the 80s. And so, yeah, I'm really dating myself there. And it was at the advent of computers and PCs. You remember we went from Atari and Commodore and started getting into computers and the Z100s and the whole nine yards. And so I was sort of thrust into technology. And I remember one day I was in Camp Pendleton, and this is back in 1985, and a bunch of Z100s arrived on the back loading dock at one of the branch clinics. And we were all standing around looking at all these weird boxes with this thing in there says PC. And none of us knew anything about it. And the commander at the time was just kind of standing there scratching his head and, you know, had his kind of finger in his ear like, you don't know what to do with these things. And so at that time, I was the first class. And so he kind of looked around at everybody and he said, well, you know, after about 30 minutes of just staring at these boxes, he said, well, Petty Officer Wilson, I guess you got a new project. And so everybody walked away, left me there on the back loading dock. And I did what you did, not knowing anything about computers, never having taken a class. I went and got a screwdriver and just took the thing apart to see what was going on the inside. And that started my whole career. I call it my whole affection for computers, technology, et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to throw that out there because you threw some breadcrumbs out there and I said, oh, man. I could so relate to what he's talking about. Man, I've been there, done that. But Toby, I have a question for you. I noticed that you started out as a naval aviator, you know, for 10 years, and then you switched over to the Air National Guard. What happened there? You did a total of 25 years. So what caused that decision? What happened there?
So I gapped my service. So I exited the Navy in October 2002, and I didn't join the Air National Guard till May 2004. And I think it was out maybe 6 months, but my cousin called me out of the blue and he's like, they're starting an information warfare aggressor squadron down in McCord. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds so awesome. And then I stop and I'm like, I'm not qualified for that. I mean, literally said that on the phone to him. He may as well have reached through the phone and slapped me. He's like, so you're gonna say no? I'm like, whoa, okay, good point. So I applied. And you know, the one thing the military is good about is if you don't know but you have an aptitude for something, they'll actually train you. And I nailed the networking question, and that's about it. Out of the 10 questions they asked me, because it was a technical interview, there's a little bit about leadership, but they weren't as crazy about that as they were like, does this person have an aptitude for the technical? Because, you know, even in 2004, it was still new. We were doing basically script kiddie hacking, which was pretty brand new at the time in terms of for the Air Force. So they were looking for someone who could learn. And I nailed that one question. Other than that, I showed I had an aptitude and they accepted me. And it wouldn't have happened if I had said no to myself, right?
You were in the Air National Guard from, what, 2004 to, what, 2019? Is that about correct?
Let me look across here. 2020. So I retired last August. Yeah, for those who can't see on camera, I actually have a goatee now. So I finally have my retired, you know, requisite facial hair to show that I'm retired. But yeah, it's just a little over a year now I've been retired.
Another connection, you know, to you that as I was listening to your story, when you ended up at Pensacola and you didn't have a billet. So basically it's one of those, what do we do with him? I don't know. Let's find something for him to
find
do.
Something to do. Yeah. Just hurry up and wait, right? Of course, like, well, we know it's going to happen someday, but we're not ready yet. So what are we going to do? And yeah, nothing like a little urinalysis to motivate an aspiring aviator.
Yeah. It made me think about when I left Long Beach, I was stationed aboard the USS New Jersey. And this is back in 1990. And they closed down the shipyards and retired the ship and all that. And so I got orders to San Diego, actually Naval Special Warfare Command.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was looking for the next exciting billet, you know, which is, oh man, what am I going to do after being on a battleship? You know, because to me it's like, well, boy, there's hardly anything that can replace that. So I figured, well, buds, I'd love to go be, I was a hospital corpsman. So I'd love to go down there and work with those guys. And so I got the dream orders. And so I showed up at Buds and guess what? They didn't have a billet for me. So they had previously filled it. So the guy, you know, before me got the orders, but the detailer, the recruiters, they forgot to take it off the screen. And so I showed up and they had the same challenge with me. Gee, what do we do with him? I don't know. But fortunately, because I was a corpsman and they had a need at the branch medical clinic at Naval Training Center, I was able to get diverted over there. But your story just has such a parallel to mine. I had to bring that one up. You know, so Toby, let me ask you something. When you got out the first time, and I just want to go back and track it. You said that you were not working for about, what, 1 or 2 months? You were unemployed for about 1 or 2 months or something like that?
Yeah, and 1 or 2 months unemployed, 3 weeks of a contract gig, and then another 2 months. So a total of 4 months unemployed.
Mm-hmm. So here's the question, and this is going to be relevant to the listeners there. It wasn't because you lacked any skills, right?
No.
You have plenty of skills.
Yeah.
And technically, you could have got a job almost anywhere, if you will. Would that be safe to make that statement?
Depending upon the type of job you want, depending upon where you were willing to go, absolutely. Like, I had a security clearance. I had people calling me from the East Coast, and they were like, hey, I see you've got X clearance. And I'm like, where are you calling from? Sorry, the answer is no. So I self-limited myself there. So yes, I didn't necessarily have to accept unemployment, but I chose to go into a field that had a glut of folks because the bubble had burst, to break into that field, right? It's not like I had a lot of experience, and to specifically, you know, get out in the Pacific Northwest because I grew up in Oregon. I wanted to come back to this area. I love the weather. It's honestly so much about the weather because it's moderate here and I just love it. It's not too humid, although it rains a lot. But other than that, I just freaking love this weather here. So that's really what it was about.
So you kind of answered my question, which is for many veterans, and here's the point that I want to make for a lot of the listeners out there. Sometimes we self-impose limitations on ourselves. And you said something that I thought was really key. It wasn't something, you know, all the offers that you have, because a lot of us get offers. And I just want people to realize that veterans are not necessarily hurting for employment opportunities. Employers want to hire us like there is no tomorrow. However, we're looking for the right fit. Things have to be lined up pretty much perfectly for us to say, that's the job that I want. That's where I want to go because it's a fit for me. And what happens, and just a footnote for some of the listeners out there, every year the Pentagon spends close to $1 billion on unemployment insurance. Okay. Close to $1 billion on unemployment insurance. And that's in a time where jobs are plenty. Veteran unemployment is really at its lowest. And actually, veteran unemployment is lower than the civilian unemployment, especially now during COVID. I think our number from DOL Vets, Department of Labor, Veteran Employment Training Services, is somewhere around about 2.6%, where the national average of unemployment rate is 3.8%. And then when you take a look at it by age, for older individuals, obviously the unemployment rate is lower, especially like in your case, as an officer with a degree, with experience, you're going to have companies just basically beating the door down to get to you. And if you have a security clearance, oh boy, they'll give you their firstborn child to get you to come work for them. But some of the younger transition service members and veterans, their unemployment rates are a little bit higher, somewhere closer to like 12%. And so it's one of those, as Kajo said before, a vast percentage of individuals leave the military without employment. Knowing what you know now and having gone through some of the challenges that you went through, what would you tell some of the listeners out there for advice?
And is this in terms of doing it differently or just like talking about how I attacked it at the time?
Perhaps your perspective, because you know what? It's going to be different for everyone. And you said something I thought that was really key. It's about your circumstances. You know, you can get a lot of job offers, but if it's not the right salary, if it's not the right location, if it's not the right amount of work, if it's not the right driving distance, I really want people to understand that the decision for employment isn't as simple as just getting a job. There are many factors involved in that decision.
Now, to clarify, I didn't have any job offers. I took my first job offer. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of inquiries. Mm-hmm. And I killed it because I didn't want to move back east. So, but no job offers. Like I literally took the first job offer. But otherwise, everything you said is correct. In terms of reflecting back on that transition and sort of the difficulties, like to be transparent, I didn't know what I wanted to do in terms of how do you translate what you do into civilian speak, right? So I read the book, What Color's Your Parachute, to try to identify in there. There were exercises to go through and they said, well, based upon your answers, we believe these are some careers that you might find to be helpful. And I found project management to be something that was closest to what I did, although we used different terminology. So that was the other thing I realized. I spoke military and I mean, I didn't know I spoke military. And then within military, I was speaking a dialect of the Navy, which is, by the way, very different from the Air Force or Army. So some examples, like my title, well, I'm a naval flight officer. What the hell is that? Right? If you're not Navy, like if you're a hospitalman and you've never been in aviation, you may not even know what that is and you were in the Navy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something you got to go, well, how in the world do I translate that job over into something that corporate America understands? Locations. How often you've seen folks on their resume, Randolph Air Force Base. Where the hell is that, right? Like, just put the city and state, man. I mean, don't put the actual name of the base because someone may understand it. They may not. The job title. I was the logs and records officer. Oh my gosh, I don't even know what the hell that is, right? And that's what I realized what Colors Your Parachute did. I mean, what it started. Here's what I want to do. And then I was like, okay, let's go after something that's project management. And then I realized the more I learned, I did a lot of that in the military. I just didn't use those terms. Logs and records officer they could have said it logs and records project manager. Of course, then you still have to do some further translation, but that was the beginning of learning to actually speak like corporate America speaks. And I didn't know I spoke a foreign language. And then obviously finding a job I had difficulty. I'm not saying everyone does. I see folks who are double dipping, right? They still have 60 days of terminal leave and they've already started their next job. And so much easier transition, but not everyone experiences it. Some folks go through what I went through or worse. But I was able to leverage my Naval Academy connection to just solicit just out of the blind an informational interview. And then it was in those informational interviews, I must have done 20 over the course of time. And then I would go back home and I would realize, oh, I need to work on this. And that was what helped me to understand I was speaking a different language, because those folks, they did speak my language. They weren't necessarily Naval Academy. They could have been any academy, but they spoke corporate America and they slowly but surely gave me pointers. And then I had to follow that bread trail and then slowly update my resume and begin to learn how to speak a different language and make sure my resume said the same thing.
So in essence, you had to relearn how to speak and talk to civilians and others. And then you had to rebuild your career from where you were. And then you had to rebrand yourself.
That's a very nice way of putting it. Yeah, that's correct.
Well, actually, that's what we do at Reboot is we have the three things you have to do is relearn, rebuild, rebrand.
There you go.
And so, again, it's sort of like remaking yourself. You realized that you needed to change because, as you mentioned, you were speaking a different language that, hey, even in the Air Force, they didn't understand the language that you're speaking. But again, yeah. It's a cultural thing when you're in these branches of services. You become so much of a part of it that you change the way your identity is. And it goes back to what Kajo said. Two-thirds face difficulty making the pivot from military to civilian life. So what's going on there? Well, what's happening is there's a struggle with identity, which is the culture, it's the language and things of that nature. But then again, there's that other issue that you pointed out, which is, yeah, but what do I want to do? You know, I could do so much. I've done so many things. And then after you've done that, then you have to pivot to, well, I want to do all these things or these other things, but I'm not certified. So I need to go back to school and I need to relearn everything all over again.
Yeah, I mean, some people certainly choose that. And I think everyone has to make the decision for themselves. I did not go back and get a master's. I did get a couple certifications. I find, coming from Microsoft, that certifications are helpful for going into a contracting gig where you work for the government. But when you're in like an Amazon or whatever, the only thing those would do for us in my current job is maybe break you out from another candidate, because we care about the experience more than we care about what's on paper. But again, if you're just comparing two resumes to one another, it certainly can break you out. It's not going to hurt you. It doesn't necessarily help you. So I would certainly not lean upon education or certifications as a panacea. There is no one catch-all, I think, for everybody. And I think everyone has to evaluate what's the best decision and path for them as they're doing that transition.
That is so true. And this will be my last question, and then I'll pass it back over to Kajo. So obviously there's a lot to do to transition from the military to civilian life. Would you agree to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't realize it until you're in the thick of it and you're like, what in the world? Yeah.
It's not as simple as just taking off the uniform and then bam, you're a fit for whatever's going on. No, you have to plan it out. This is a major personal self project.
Yeah.
That really requires long-term planning. And so my final question to you is, that being the case, When should someone start planning for their career after the military?
So I'm going to tell you what I did, right? And now I'm going to kind of describe what I did differently and answer that question. I'll also say that some folks, I'm going to be honest, they have a very easy transition. There are times when what you do in the military has a direct translation and people are looking for you and boom, and it's easy. And God bless them. So this podcast is not for them. This is for the rest of us who... And I know folks, oh, your Naval Academy, you know, you're on some sort of pedestal. Well, you know, I went through a really interesting situation. So not everyone goes through what I went through, but unemployment shook me up really hard. If I were to do it differently, I would start probably 2 years out, meaning you got to start early. You're like, what in the world? Like a 4 year tour, you're starting halfway through? Well, yeah. Now, I also wouldn't tell anyone in the military I'm getting out until you literally drop that paperwork, because you never know when you're going to change your mind, because you do not want to project that, because boy, that could, you could lose opportunities and you never know. I remember I was thinking of getting out of the Guard, and I know that's just a part-time job, but things changed and next thing you know, I'm staying in. And then that was another 9 years. I mean, you never know what day one looks like, you know, everything's going to hell. The next day could be a new day and the sun's shining and you change your mind. You just never know. Do not make decisions that could close doors. I don't want to say regret, just close doors. Don't close those doors. Keep them open, right, until the very last second. Because obviously when you drop your paperwork, it is what it is. But I would start early. And these steps I'm going to say, they work in a cycle. And I'll let you do your branding because I really like that. But I've already forgotten what it was, like three R's, I think.
Relearn, rebuild, and rebrand.
There you go. I think you need to start to network. If you're overseas, it's going to be insanely hard, which is what it was for me. But if you're in the United States, go to the closest city, right? Once you figure out what you want to do, I guess that's sort of the first piece, is figure out what you want to do when you grow up and then start networking in those circles. You can start on LinkedIn, but eventually I'm going to suggest that you really absolutely need to go face to face, but I'm not going to beat on that too much. But so you're going to have to network, right? You're going to have to find someone who's in that field and learn more about that field. And then you may have to iterate because you're like, oh no, I don't want to do that. Right. Oh, okay. Try this other thing. And then get into networking there and figure out what that actually is. That's going to take some time. I don't think that's a 3 week process unless you've already thought about this. And then fine, maybe you already know you want to be a nuclear engineer or a pharmacist or whatever. And fine, if you already know that, then you probably don't need to do this as much. But for those of us who are going, say, from infantry or naval flight officer into tech, which is a sharp departure, yeah, you need to figure out, well, like what in tech? Tech is huge, right? It's really huge. Do you want project management? Do you want developer? Do you want to be in AI, machine learning? There's so much there. Learn how to rewrite your resume, and that thing is hard, and how to express your experience in corporate speak. You wish you had the Rosetta Stone or Babel for your resume, and it doesn't exist. You just have to walk through those steps in a methodical fashion, and then learn what programs are available. Like at Microsoft, they have the Microsoft Software and Services Academy, but if you don't search for it, if you don't ask questions, you may not even know if it's available on your base, right? Mm-hmm. If you ask the right questions and you're inquisitive and curious, that you'll start to be able to follow that rabbit trail and find out where you want to do. But ultimately, you got to create a plan for how to shore up the gaps that you identify through, hey, here's what I want to do when I grow up. Here's the network, that person or people that actually start to educate you about what that career is. And you go, oh, I've got a gap there. Go shore that up. There's a nice quote. Seneca says, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Folks at times look lucky, but sometimes it's because they were sitting there preparing for it, and that doesn't happen overnight. This isn't a microwave thing that you go 2 minutes and I'm done.
There's another way of saying that phrase. Chance favors the prepared mind is another exactly. way to say that. But you're so right. I want to pass this to Kajo, but I just want to reemphasize the point that you made, which is start early, at least 2 years, and then figure out what you want to do and then start planning, networking, developing, getting the training. This is where the work begins, but most people wait until 6 months prior to separation before they start planning.
Yep.
And that's way too late. That's going to put them in a very awkward position.
Anything's possible, but I think what you've done is you've increased the complexity, you've increased the grief and the angst and, you know, the stress. It's needless. I mean, if you get the right mentorship, if you start looking early enough, then you can alleviate that. Does it increase your stress at the time? Of course it is. You're trying to do, in a sense, it feels like two jobs, but that's certainly better than the alternative, which is really painful if you experience it.
Yeah. Kajal, over to you. Now, this is a great discussion.
Yeah, this is great. It's all about knowing resources as well. And there are a lot of resources out there. Absolutely, a quick Google search is great. But knowing your community, asking questions, getting out there, putting yourself out there, which is very hard to do, getting out of the comfort zones, is something that is so valuable. And it's easy to say it, but it's one thing to just put it into action. And we all have to do that. We all have to get out of our comfort zones a little bit in order to find the path and find the identity. So all great things. I want to pivot because we've got Toby, who has years of IT infrastructure, cybersecurity background, and we know now that cybercrime is up about 600% since the start of COVID, and it's just unbelievable. And love to know a little bit about what a typical day is like as a cybersecurity professional. I know you've got a lot of things you can't disclose in your line of work, but for those who are potentially looking into getting into cyber or security or IT in general, what would that day look like?
So I'm a program manager, so I am going to give you what a day looks like through the eyes of a program manager. And being a manager, it offers a totally different day, but I'll go backwards in time just to give you a sense of what it looked like. So specifically, I'll give you Microsoft. I joined about 8 years ago, and I was a security champ, they called it, privacy champ, and compliance champ. The reason I even was offered the interview was because I knew the person. This goes back to networking, because of the Air National Guard. So my job at T-Mobile and then my job at Microsoft, just getting under the interview was because I knew who the hiring manager was, because of I knew them in the Air National Guard. So, but I got hired and I thought I knew so much about security, right? Because I had literally hacked computer networks, or maybe not done every little last piece myself, but I knew how to do it. I'm thinking I understand security. And then I moved into the cloud. And I also moved in at an enterprise level that made the Air Force networks that I was at in the Air Guard look small. And so I had to relearn. And I think really you have to embrace a growth mindset. It's something you hear Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, say, and I'm going to tell you it was probably 4 to 5 years before I truly understood it. And I actually read the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. Amazing. I mean, I was at Microsoft 4 years plus before I even read it. So I had been listening to Satya talk about it and then realized, oh my gosh, I had such a fixed mindset coming from the military. In general, you know, it's like, what do? You take your ASVAB score to see if you qualify, and then that's a number that seems to hang over your head like a halo for the rest of your career, right? And so it's like, as good as you were on that day that you were stupid, maybe were out drinking or whatever you were doing, and you didn't get enough sleep or whatever, suddenly that's the number assigned to you, and that's not actually the case, right? If you don't realize that, then that's what you think about yourself and you identify with that for the rest of your life. And so if you make a mistake, in other words, you didn't get a good score or whatever, you're identifying with that. And that is something that we do a disservice in the military, because we don't constantly look to actually try to fail and learn from our failures. I am an advocate for going and actually trying and failing fast. And that sounds so weird to say you want to fail, because we don't learn when we're on the mountain. You don't learn at the top. You learn when you fall down. Mm-hmm. That is when you actually learn everything. I had to relearn everything that I thought I understood. I had to humble myself, right? Because I thought I was all that, or so I thought, and then had to realize, man, I need to just go in, be humble, go start asking questions, be curious, realize it's okay to fail. Literally relearn that sometimes daily. Like, knowing and saying it to yourself versus living it are two different things. It's easy to say, oh, go do whatever. It's actually sometimes hard to actually go do it. I had to ask a lot of questions. My manager was on military leave of absence, so I was actually having to try to figure out how to solicit even mentorship and coaching advice. And that was obviously very difficult coming, you know, into Microsoft, where it was my foray into software. I had to learn what security was like at an enterprise level. No matter what it is you think you know, I guarantee there'll be something different, something new. And I don't think it's about, like, what is the technology? It's about, are you willing to go and learn? Are you willing to ask the right questions, be curious, and then go find out the value you can add? And that's what I had to go do, and be humble about it. Because where I thought I knew a lot, Kajal, I didn't know jack. Because they did things so differently, because they're doing it in a cloud. Cloud is very different than a standard network, so things are done very differently. I think that at a high level was day in, day out, learning, applying that growth mindset, I still have to remember to do that. I still have to remember that I don't know anything. Now I'm a manager, and you're like, well, you were a manager, you know, in the military. Sure. But managing IT, managing the cloud in the environment that I'm in, very, very different. We don't do a good job of coaching in the military, and I have to learn how to coach. That's literally something I hadn't done a lot of, even up until recently. And my manager is amazing at challenging me to learn how to do that. So even today, after years of experience in industry, I'm still learning. Constantly have to embrace that growth mindset, realize, yep, I'm still going to make mistakes. I remember going to see my manager at my performance review this year, and I looked at my bonus and I'm like, oh, wow. I was surprised. And I said, well, I'm sorry. I thought my recollection was I was stumbling and fumbling all over the place. And he's like, yeah, you were. And you learned and you changed, you redirected, and that's all I can ask for.
That's incredible. And I'm going to get the link and we're going to add that to the podcast link for that book because I have read that book. And it is so important for anybody, any industry to have that growth mindset. That's so important and so incredible that you still use that. Even being in a top level at your organization, you can still learn those and show that to your current staff as well. So pretty neat there. So I wanted to put you in the hot seat a little bit. What's your greatest fear right now, maybe in your career or maybe insecurity or anything that you can think of that is your biggest fear?
We all have our own personal fears, like, well, who wants to get cancer or something like that. But if I avoid all that and just think about sort of the deathbed scenario, like, well, what do I regret at my deathbed or whatever? I think it's literally I fear caving into fear and failing without daring greatly. One of my favorite quotes is from Teddy Roosevelt. It was the excerpt from Citizen in a Republic from Sarbanes-Paris. And yes, I had to write it down. If you read it all, there's a portion of it. It says, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. I don't have aspirations to be a CEO or anything. My aspirations are more about giving back, to get into a place where I'm blessed and then I can actually go and bless others. And in that, I guess the question is, will I be able to dare greatly? It isn't so much about can I dare greatly at Microsoft and make some sort of achievement financially or whatever. I'm not saying I'm against that. I'm all for that. That helps make your life easier. But I'm really questioning what's that daring greatly in terms of influencing other people so that when I'm gone from this earth, there's some little nugget that I was able to pass on to others that helps make someone else's life better.
Yeah. Well, I think the listeners out there will definitely take a lot from what you have said and your insights and really the things that you've helped along the way. So next question is, what's your biggest challenge right now?
So no joke, my biggest challenge right now is growing as a manager and actually developing my directs. One of the biggest things I'm struggling with is how do I actually, for instance, differentiate for a direct, here's what level one is versus level two, and put it into something that's actionable. How do I make that actionable so that they can turn that into what's the behavior they need to show at level one versus level two so that they can actually show they're ready because you need to be actually operating at level two to get there. So I haven't promoted anyone as a manager, and that is actually my current biggest challenge and trying to develop my directs to be their own best.
That's great. So what's your next mission?
My V current is being a manager, but I still have a desire. I just have a passion for veterans. Being a veteran myself, having gone through a really rough transition, seeing folks who they wait till 6 months and now they're trying to do this insanely difficult transition, but they've already kind of pulled that switch and, you know, notified everyone they're getting out. I just want to be able to try to give back. Something I tell my daughter, she's a junior in college right now, is the world is not getting less technical. And so I saw this actually happen to someone at Microsoft. They were a civil engineer by education. They took one coding class, data structures and data algorithms, and then he competed against other computer science degree folks for an internship at Microsoft, beat them, and then ended up getting hired not as an engineer, as a PM. I want to learn how to code so I can show folks how easy it is to actually break in. Even if you don't want to be a developer, learning it helps you to talk to developers and, you know, in a better way. And that's what I want to do. But I've been waiting for my next chapter in my life. We're building a home up in Kirkland, Washington. So that's what's consuming me right now. So I can't do that today. But that is the goal, is to move up there, get to a more stable environment in terms of my time, and then go back, invest in my own self so I can give back.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. Thank you for answering those hot topic questions. Appreciate that. So that concludes our sixth episode of Your Next Mission. I want to thank Maurice and Toby for your time and insights today. I want to thank all of you listening out there and giving us your time. If you want more information about CCS Global Tech, CCS Learning Academy, go to ccsla.com/vets. And there you can take a tech quiz to see where your technology career path can take you if you are interested in that sector as well. Thanks so much, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you, Kajal. And if you want some information on transitioning, go to www.nvtsi.org.